Good afternoon. I'd like to call to order the September 8th, 2026 Parks and Rec Committee meeting. Holly, roll call, please.
Candace Rutledge.
Here.
Steve Black and Brandon Marks haven't arrived yet. Manoj Batar.
Here.
Catherine Prussian.
Here.
And Bin Hui.
Here.
We have a quorum of four.
Thank you, Holly. Are there any agenda changes?
Kevin, are you going to discuss the survey at all? Just an announcement.
Okay. Now we are at persons to be heard. Are there any public participation for items off the agenda not to exceed 3 minutes? Please come forward and state your first and last name for the record, if so. Okay. Seeing none, let's move on to approval of minutes for the August 11th, 2026 meetings. Do we have a motion?
I'll move to approve the August 11, 2026 Parks and Rec Committee meeting. Second.
Okay. Is there any public comment on the minutes? Okay. Seeing none, is there any discussion amongst the board? Okay. Holly, can we get a roll call vote on that?
On the motion to approve the minutes of the August 11th, 2026 meeting, Ben Huey.
Yes.
Brandon Marks.
Yes.
Manoj Batar.
Hi.
Catherine Prussian.
Yes.
Motion passes 4-0 on item A.
Holly, I think you omitted me.
Sorry, Candace Rutledge.
I.
Motion passes. Thank you. And Steve Black is emailing me right now. He's trying to hop online. So I'm going to send him the link so he'll join us online.
Perfect. Thank you,
Thank you.
Holly. Okay, let's move on to the reports. None from me. Do we have any from the members?
I was just going to mention that I guess Mud Ball just concluded and went, sounds like everyone had a lot of fun. And then so now the fall upper molar stuff is happening, and so we have softball and some baseball interest and stuff, and I wanted to revisit the idea of at some point making sure that we have those meetings and leading up to our fall season and spring season, just to refresh the calendar, kind of like and I know you've made an effort to do that, but I just think it'd be helpful to know what our typical schedules are, just so we don't have conflicts with other users. I know our group in particular is late in figuring out exactly what times we need, but anyway, that's all I would say. But the padding behind home plate was put up, which is beautiful and all renewed, and so yeah, good stuff going on.
Thank you, Brandon. Any other members?
Yeah, just want to share something I've noticed recently. I often see garbage down in the bike park area, and I'm always curious like where this comes from. But the last couple times I've been through there is a trail of garbage that goes up to the red building, that's up the hill above there. So just an FYI for city, it seems like some of that's coming out of their dumpsters up there. It comes down that hill and then it disperses. It looks like it's surrounded by the gazebo and places. But it's great to see all the, it seems like increased bike use down at the skate park this year, which is pretty cool.
Thank you, KK. Okay, city staff.
Ken Smith, grounds maintenance. Yeah, it's been a busy month. I'm shorthanded right now. One of my full-time people has been off for the last 3 weeks. He should be back next week. So been down in person a month. So that's kind of been a little bit more load on us. But, we're doing what we can. Mudball just happened, and as far as I know, everything seemed to go pretty smoothly. So until I get an email that says otherwise, we did the best we could to prep everything, make sure the fields were dragged, plenty of trash receptacles, and whatever other maintenance issues or things that we could foresee. We did get the new scoreboards set up at Kim Sham, and two of the three are working perfectly. The other one is having some signal issues, so I'm trying to get a hold of the company to address that for the upper field, just where the clubhouse is versus where the scoreboard is, I think is creating some signal interference. So we've discovered that if we take the score or the control box to the field, it works, but that's not ideal. So trying to get that figured out. And as you know, fall approaches and most of these events, we're going to start looking at winterizing and everything. As far as Mueller goes, we did get those replacement pads. When we ordered the backstop pads, we were short a couple. And so Connor ordered a couple extra pieces, and we were able to get those put in before Mudball and have all new backstop padding. I have gotten a quote and an order placed for new pads for the rails at all of the, or both of the dugouts. Those rails have, the padding on those has wore out. So we're going to get new padding on those rails, and it's the same company, so it'll be the same color. Everything will match up just perfect. And this next week we'll be putting the new signs up on the Seawalk. So getting that project kind of prepped and ready. Friday, there's no cruise ships, so we're going to go through and do it on Friday. And hopefully that goes pretty smooth. We got to figure out how to cut out those brass posts. So that's going to be an adventure, but I'm pretty sure we'll figure it out. So we'll get creative if we have to. Other than that, not much else to report on.
So Kevin Knox, Parks and Rec Manager, trying to decide my order here, but I'm going to lead with something that happened at Bletchley yesterday that is a really hard event to talk about. Alaska Swimming and Sitka lost an icon in Sitka. Monday morning, Dr. Jacobson finished his swim workout with the Barracudas, got out, went into the locker room and collapsed and was never revived. Rachel and some swim parents were first on scene. They performed CPR along with an AED deployment, and EMS arrived pretty quickly and worked on him for a little while and declared him deceased at the scene. So we've been dealing with that a lot. Those of you who didn't know Dr. J, he was a lifelong swimmer, somebody that was involved with Barracudas for a long time because his daughter swam, but then also he was a master swimmer, state record holder for a lot of masters events, an official with Alaska Swimming and actually USA Swimming. He participated in some national swim meets as an official. We're very sad to lose him. I worked alongside him a lot on the pool deck and also coached him when I was a Barracuda coach. So it's been a really hard couple of days for sure for us at Bletchley and within the swim community. So we're grappling with that. This weekend, I would imagine I'm going to do this in tribute to him, but for the Goggle and Gravels event, I wasn't planning on doing it, but I'm going to walk the 1K, swim a 500, and walk another 1K. Kind of in honor of Dr. J. He was a big hiker, as well as a big swimmer. So, yeah. So, Rachel is doing okay. She's taking the day off today, obviously, and we actually closed the pool because we don't have an AED asset on right now. So, I have to replace that so that we're rescue ready and safe. We do have a loaner now from the fire department, so we'll be opening up again for the high school swim team to swim this afternoon, but our public swims are closed today because of that, but we should be back open tomorrow. But yeah, thoughts go out to Dr. J and his family and all of those that he touched. Like I said, gravel and goggles this weekend. It's both a sprint and Olympic distance, so that'll be a fun event. Not a lot of people signed up, but it is its first year. Unfortunately, also Klondike is happening this weekend, so lost a lot of runners to that. We'll be watching future calendars to help coordinate that. But we've got lots of other stuff happening with Parks and Rec, of course, with after-school programs. Our guitar club is rapidly filling up at the high school. Dungeons and Dragons is totally full at BMS, which is great. Our after school explorers is also, I believe, full as well. So at Hoots, we're really excited there. Hoping to get some more after school programs on because there's clearly a high demand for that kind of stuff all throughout all the age levels. So this last week, we launched the survey for the land use plan. For the commercial recreational land use guidelines. So far, we have about 30 people that have fully completed the survey, which we're pretty excited about, continuing to get the word out about that. Roughly about half of them are operators and the other half are recreational users. So a little less than half are only interested in Bear Enough Warm Springs. So it's mostly, you know, operators that operate out of or people that are mostly interested in how Bear Enough Warm Springs is used. Around 17, I believe, or 18 people also answer questions about local assets too, like the water assets and trails. We did conduct a operator meeting last week as well. Hard time of year to do it, but we found a Thursday with no ships, and we actually had 13 in attendance, 13 operations or businesses in attendance, which was exciting. Seven were in person, and six joined us by Zoom. Most of the discussion was centered around Bear Enough Warm Springs, you know, kind of the access and parity there. A lot of concern about yacht use and how to deal with that. Both bare boat, which is kind of like a bare boat charter is if, you know, somebody rents the boat and captains it and does all the staffing and all that. So there's technically nobody on board that's paid, although there's ways to kind of get around that. But then also the, you know, full chartered yachts. There are reports of some mega yachts that would come in and bring in 25, 30 people off a single boat at one time, which creates a lot of congestion on the boardwalks there and a lot of concern. The other concern was around foreign flag vessels that come through. Either they're just, you know, stopping through Southeast and, you know, on a one pass, or they're only here for a season, kind of going up and down, and how many people they bring aboard or bring ashore to, and how to deal with those. Also heard some suggestions on how we might be able to split a traditional season and shoulder seasons for some operators, because some operators only come in there in the spring or the late fall as hunting guides, where the tour season is kind of a different subgroup or a different group there. So that shoulder season could be a subgroup almost. A little bit of talk about our local trails. Concerns with our group size limits mostly, and in particular how institutional organizations or organizations that don't have it as a primary mission to take people out on their trails or out on tours or other things like that, how they end up using trails or other permitted areas. In particular, the Fine Arts Camp was mentioned just because they're very visible. They have, you know, labeled vans and stuff like that. They would pull up to a trail and, you know, 30 or 40 kids would go tromping off down the trail. And then the business owner's like, well, I got to stick to my eight or six or whatever, you know, where's the parity there? So talked a little bit about that.
These are in the comments.
This was from the operator meeting.
Oh,
yeah. And sometimes we have seen some overlap there. So some of the operators are saying some of the same things in person as they did on the survey. So, yeah. So we're getting some good data out of all of this. In your packet, there's also the sheets kind of showing the totals for each of the areas, kind of where we ended up in the end. These are the totals of use on group size, groups per week, and total clients. Those are the estimates that all the operators gave us in their applications. So this isn't a, you know, a reconciled report at this point. We will be working on that in the next coming months. But just I wanted to highlight a couple of points of interest or patterns of interest, I guess. BWS, we clearly have some high demand. We're at near capacity there for groups per week. And we did do quite a bit of work there to, you know, kind of look at the fractional use, because some operators would only go in there twice a month or, you know, something less than once a week. So we really wanted to try to capture that. Thimbleberry and Heart Lake, you know, has some of our largest group size averages. And our total client estimate still fell well within what the limit was there in the land use plan. Our groups per week with Thimbleberry was closest on our capacity there, 22.9. Herring Cove, we actually exceeded our group limits, though I allowed for that just because several of the operators said, you know, they were going to put down one or two, but they likely wouldn't be using that just because they, you know, more likely were going to use an asset in town, but they wanted to kind of reflect that they might use, you know, Herring Cove if other places were too crowded or the weather wasn't right or their client had a, you know, a different desire, so that, you know, they could go out there. You know, being able to parse out that fractional is a lot more difficult with our trails than it is for something like Baranoff Warm Springs. And our group size limits, the most often reported area of groups in excess of recommended limits was Thimbleberry and the Herring Cove areas. There is some confusion, and we've been working with the Forest Service on where the boundaries are for a lot of our different areas. In particular, with Herring Cove, a lot of people thought that they had to go way beyond into, you know, that trail area to get into the Forest Service. And it's actually just beyond that top bridge before you get to the viewpoint for Bear Mountain Falls. That falls that comes off the backside that has that viewpoint. There's a bench there. So it's somewhere in between the bench and the bridge that transitions into the Forest Service. A lot of operators actually do venture into that area and technically should have a U.S. Forest Service permit. And we've been talking with the permit coordinators with the Forest Service about, you know, how that all kind of plays out. Because in one case, an operator was using higher group size limits, even higher than ours, because their comment back was, your limits didn't come out until I had already sold, you know, sold our capacity or whatever. They had 9 or 10 people in their group, you know, they couldn't like tell somebody, no, I'm sorry, I can't take you, because they had already purchased it. But in fact, if they did that whole trail, they were subject to the Forest Service limits, which ours are exactly the same. And those limits have been in place for many years. So we are just trying to figure out all of that, and work in an educational capacity with any operators. So, other things with the special use areas, we had 25 operators granted permits for BWS. There's a lot of reports that we're not even capturing half at this point. If you count in the chartered yachts and foreign flag vessels, other boutique cruisers and other things like that. So, we really need to get a lot of education out there. Looked at a lot of placer data in regards to this, and some of this will start come out as we start to talk about our land use permits or our land use plan for 2027. But right now, if we look at our year to date, Baranoff Warm Springs has had a little over 25,000 visitors, which is a 3-year increase of 179% from, you know, what other placer data is out there. And that's probably our best guide at this point. Our highest visitation at Baranoff Warm Springs are Mondays and Wednesdays, which was interesting to see. Goddard Hot Springs, 3 total permits were issued. Our group sizes are consistent with the water taxi license limits, so that's kind of where we hit that 6. We have gotten some comments about Goddard should have a higher group size limit. But if we're only allowing water taxis in there, I don't know how that really affects it. Our groups per week were less than half of the guideline limits, so we're not anywhere near of hitting any of those. And right now, the placer data, which is starting to come back a bit more robust than it has in the past, I think they're starting to hit some more apps that are, you know, tagging that, and also the installation of some new cellular towers on Bjork, I think, are allowing for a little bit more coverage there at Goddard. I was sitting down there in the tubs this weekend, and I had total coverage on my phone, so which was odd. I turned it off as soon as I noticed that, though. Didn't want a phone call. About 1,700 visits in 2025. In the last 12 months, about 1,500 visits, according to Placer. It's about a 75% increase in the last 3 years of year over year. And at in case anybody's wondering, Goddard Hot Springs has an average dwell time of 179 minutes. And that's all I have. Sorry for the long report.
Thank you, Kevin. Thank you, Kent. Do we have anything from our assembly liaison?
Nope. Oh.
Thank you. Okay.
Can I give a reminder to Steve, please, to turn his camera on?
Oh, yes.
If he's able to. Thank you.
Steve, we need to see you. There you are. Thank you. Okay. Any other reports? Okay. Let's go ahead and move on to unfinished business. So we were discussing the disc golf demonstration course on Lower Molar Field. And a couple of members wanted to discuss that further and possibly make a motion. So we're open for discussion. And Kevin, had nothing further on that.
I didn't have anything further, but I forgot we were going to have a standing item for the master plan update. That was a land use plan. Yeah, so the master plan, the Parks and Recreation master plan, and if we could get can we just jump back up to other reports and throw it in there for now? Because Barb is here.
Yes. Okay. Let's go back to reports and focus on the master plan. Barbara?
Oops, I didn't do it. Okay. Barb Morse, Sitka Recreation Foundation board member. And we had just wanted to make sure we keep the Parks and Rec Committee as a whole updated as to the process for the master plan. So I'll be brief. We had a kickoff meeting with the Corvus team, who's doing handling the contract, in mid-August. And I think there was their whole team and five of us from the Sitka group online. One of the things we looked at mostly was revising the schedule, doing some adjustments to the time frame. So, you know, we had thought we would do the first public meeting in September, and instead we're going to go ahead and have another meeting with them in September to, you know, to continue to check in and plan. But the first public meeting, to give us all more time, will be probably the week of October 20th, 21st, 22nd, in there, where they will come over and we will start. And the survey, the community survey, which we will be developing between now and then, will launch sometime around mid-October to mid-November. So when we'll have it open. So hopefully that's a good time to get community input. And then we'll have another public meeting in December. Originally, we had hoped to wrap everything up and have a completed plan by January, and I think folks there didn't think that was entirely realistic, but what we came up with was that by January, we would have a good sense of what the priorities were. The community survey would be completed, and we'd have, you know, enough to move forward if we were going to propose funding either from the city or the state for a project. But the actual project itself and the finished product would probably be, I think, correct me if I'm wrong, Kevin, late March or early April to complete that. So, but anyways, we are excited to move forward on it. And, you know, the community survey, I think, will be a really important piece. And we'll be asking everyone to help us reach out and get as many people responding from, you know, throughout the whole demographics of Sitka. So if anyone has any questions, either myself or I might defer to Kevin, could answer that.
Yeah, I didn't catch it, but I might have missed this. Sorry, Barb. But there is a plan to have a preliminary draft ready for right around in January, the first or second week in January, to have a good look at what is potential here. So right. And then that final plan would come around in March, so it'll give the community and other stakeholders lots of time to be able to kind of chew on what we're looking at, and, you know, provide additional feedback and kind of look at what gaps we might have or other things like that.
Questions?
Are you looking for more input from us at this point?
At this point, we have two of your Parks and Rec committee members are joined us on our local Sitka team. So hopefully they'll be engaged and involved. You know, we'll definitely continue to invite you to attend our meetings. And even when we're, you know, have emails back and forth, I personally think the community survey piece will be something that, you know, my experience is that takes longer than you expect it when you're tailoring it to your own, because I'm sure they'll come up with a more general one, but then we'll want to make sure it addresses Sitka. So hopefully, you know, the Parks and Rec committee members that are involved can give us feedback, and I think we'd be happy to share it with the whole committee if that was appropriate, you know, our kind of working draft. But that's really, at this point, it's just to keep you aware and give you an opportunity to get involved at any point that you would like to.
Thank you, Barb.
Hey, Barb, I was not available for that first meeting, but I hope to remain engaged if there's another opportunity.
Great. We'll definitely keep you. I know that you're really busy. I was actually proposing to Chris. I actually was just talking to him when he got out of his dentist appointment this morning as I walked here. I was proposing to him to possibly do noon meetings with him so that it might be more, easier for you both to attend. It seems to be, if, you know, you're able to do those, that might be the best time to try to meet up. So.
Is it possible to get just like a little bit more heads up on those meetings too?
Yeah.
I can usually rearrange stuff
yeah,
pretty easy, but
That last one was pretty last minute, and we'd hope to be able to get something a little bit more regular up for the books.
I myself was in the middle of a hurricane in Hilo, but I somehow managed to get online. But anyways, yeah, definitely, I think we should try to give at least a week ahead for you, and we'll do our best to do so. So thank you.
Thank you, Barb. Okay, anything else on that, Kevin? Okay, we'll hop back over to unfinished business. Have the board ha has anyone on the committee had a chance to think more about that? Any further discussion and possible motions for the lower molar field for disc golf?
And I'm seeing in our packet the full proposal as requested.
I've got some thoughts and feedback from folks, but I don't know when's appropriate. Per Robert's order, do we need to have something on the table first?
Ideally, if you can make a motion first and it's seconded, and then it's opened up to public comment, then the committee can discuss it and take a roll call vote. But I know we've done a discussion first and then make a motion, and that's very common as well. So if you don't have a motion off the bat and you just want to discuss it, that's fine too.
Is there a request in front of the committee? I see discussion slash decision. Are we trying to like recommend to the Parks and Rec department? Do we know what the request is?
I mean, technically, there doesn't need to be a motion or anything like that. A consensus or blessing is fine. If you want it to be a little bit more official, it could go down the route of.
Right. Yeah, last time we had just wanted a little more input on the idea. Okay, cool.
Yeah, I think that was the whole point, is just to let people, hopefully the stakeholders that matter, like the high school, it looked like, might not have been made aware or whatever. People who are impacted by a decision that is made by the city should certainly, be involved or at least notified before an action is taken that affects that interest, So that's the whole point behind giving them notice, which it sounds like Kiki then did. And so that was my only concern, not the substance of the request or the idea or anything else. I mean, I think it's a great idea. And it's great that Kevin takes the initiative to get this stuff going and it's efficient. But I just think when stakeholders are impacted, it's hard to anticipate, all the potential stakeholders. But here, obviously, lower molar is the only track, and there does seem to be an obvious stakeholder. So I just think the good practice is to involve them in the future to the extent we can. But I don't think we need to really do anything, is what it sounds like.
Okay, Katie.
Yeah, I had a chance to talk to some coaches and parents and other participants of the track. And I think what I heard uniformly from folks was concern about the permanent markers going on the track. And they're not necessarily on the track lanes, but they're in the track facility. So I guess I would recommend, and to add to that, I think in reading through the plan and hearing the intentions, I think part of it is we're approving of something that's pilot, but talks about piloting use and interest and then possibility for expansion. And I think the intent of throwing disc golf and running circles on a track are in conflict with each other. So I think I would rather see this as a true pilot that talks about a period of time and temporary things that you are used as a pilot effort with a follow-up of kind of a report that gives a sense of whether that's an interest. And I think this is perfect timing for the master plan. If we truly want a disc golf course in this community, which we've heard lots of interest, and I would strongly support myself personally. But I think the lack of looking at other places and the potential conflict on the track is concerning. So that I would rather see it pilot and temporary than permanent. And that was the concern about the permanent markers, it was something I heard from several people.
I guess I so sorry to chime in again, guys. But anyway, I'll just I agree. I like the idea because that seems like a practical fix. We don't need to do anything. We're just pointing out that it's temporary, or at least from our perspective, it's that way. And we would like to obviously, once they are installed, we'll hear if there's, you know, we'll see what the level of conflict is. So it's kind of like a trial. And so it's a good way to test it. And maybe there is no conflict, and maybe it can, maybe they're symbiotic, you know, who knows?
Can we review those, like what permanent means? I was under the impression that it was like, quote unquote permanent, and that they need to be installed, but they're pretty easy to uninstall. Is that something that might assuage some of the coaches' worries?
Yeah, and as a it listed more as semi-permanent, I guess. You know, how do you define that? I don't really know. I think the notion though in that semi-permanent is that they're not hard to relocate. They're not super substantial structures or anything like that. The system that we do have already ready to deploy, you know the baskets are removable. You can actually take them off of the sleeve and post, and it leaves a little stub that you can put a cone over or something like that, and then, you know, not have the basket in the way. And all the locations that we're looking at were, you know, while there are a couple of that were within the field, they were in the grass areas and not near the like the disc pad or disc and shot put, you know, pads, or in an area that would be, you know, in any way, you know, conflicting with the running track or something like that. You know, if you put a timeline on it, I don't know how to come up with that definition. I guess, you know, any timeline can also be amended if it got close and we weren't ready to move it, and we were finding that there wasn't conflict, and that, you know, you wanted to extend that timeline. You could also shorten it if there was, you know, a conflict that came up that we wanted to address. But again, you know, this is something that could be fairly easily moved or removed. And it's five baskets or four baskets. So it's not a full, you know, putting a, you know, 9 or 18 whole course out there. This is four baskets that you utilize some baskets multiple times.
And there's only two within the zone of the track and field.
Within, yes, in the inside.
Yeah.
Okay. Steve, would you like to comment?
Yes, I'd actually like to make a motion to approve the proposal for the installation of a semi-permanent 9-hole disc golf course at Lower Molar Park for 1 year, or 1 year period, to be looked at again after that for a continued basis. Not sure how you want to word the end of it, though.
I second.
Okay. Do we have any public comment on this motion? Okay, come on up and state your first and last name for the record.
You might want to turn that other one off. You might get feedback.
You don't want me echoing. my name is Jason Hudson. I drew the picture of the course that you looked at last time. I wasn't able to attend that meeting. I am a disc golf player. I support this happening, obviously, since I drew the picture of it. Totally understand the concern about conflicts on that space and not wanting to get in the way of the activities that are already happening there. I think, yeah, limited amount of time. I think we just want to see disc golf happen somewhere and have a place to do it. The baskets, yeah, can easily be removed from their pedestals. I think the disc golf club would probably be open to helping manage events and things that might make it easier to manage if conflicts do happen. But generally just here to express that I'd like to see this happen and represent our disc golf community.
Thank you, Jason. Okay, we
Jason,
have.
are you representing yourself as an individual or are you here as an employee?
Self-employed.
Okay, thanks.
Okay, thank you. Okay, state your first and last name for the record.
Mike Miller, here's an individual. I just wanted to say that I also see this as a temporary course. I'd like to see it there and grow and move elsewhere. Into the woods would be the best place. It's not ideal. I recognize that, and I appreciate that. And something that, in terms of our community, will definitely put out the expectation that if there are track events, that there is no disc golf played, and try to maintain that as best as possible. But like I said, ultimately, this pilot program hopefully is in the spirit of showing that there is interest. And with that interest comes a bigger movement to move it somewhere else for a full 18 holes. This is just a start. So that's all I have to say.
Thank you. Do we have any more committee discussion before a vote?
I've got a question for Kevin. I really appreciate that feedback. That's what really matters to me, that there's actually a trajectory towards something that's not in conflict with current established use. And I guess I would, maybe not an ask for Kevin, but I would ask that Parks and Rec or the city were to start thinking about, and maybe it's through this master plan process, but where it would be ideal. Like I think it landed here easily. We wouldn't have the fight from baseball if we put it on all the other fields around town. I think with a commitment from Parks and Rec and the user group to seek a long-term solution, I think we'll definitely turn my vote.
I like that comment a lot. Thanks, KK. And I would encourage the disc golf community to help identify some potential locations to vet during our parks master planning process that's starting soon, and so we can get that into a long-term vision.
Okay, I think Holly, we're ready for a roll call vote on that.
All right, and Steve, help me if I don't get the ending correct here. On the motion to approve the proposal of the installation of the disc golf demonstration course at Lower Muller Field for a 1-year period before review. All right. Ben
Okay.
Huey.
Yes.
Brandon Marks.
Yes.
Manoj Batar.
Hi.
Catherine Prussian.
Yes.
Steve Black.
Yes.
And Candace Rutledge.
Aye.
Motion passes 6-0 on item B.
Thank you, Holly, and thank you for the public comment. That was really helpful. Let's move on to new business. Ben has an introduction on the recreational trails program grant opportunity and is looking for feedback from the committee on some ideas for trail improvements.
Jimmy, there,
I
here.
think, yeah.
And Candace, I'll need to step out a few minutes before one, so just want to let you know. Thanks.
Ben Huey, Executive Director of Sika TrailWorks, coming to you in hopes of getting some feedback and letting you know about an opportunity. The Multi-Use Trails Program is funded by the Recreational Trails Program. This is a tiny slice of the U.S. gas tax that goes towards trails under the assumption that ATVs and people driving to trailheads are paying some of that tax and deserve some of the support for that infrastructure. This is the only regular public funding for trail maintenance and development. There's lots of other programs that fund larger things, but as far as like recreational trails, this is one of the premier. It funds up to $200,000 of non-motorized or $300,000 for motorized. So that's not a big new project. The Cross Trail, the last extension was like $2 million. So we're talking about somewhat smaller or phased projects. They are ideally multi-use. They want to serve a lot of the public. They want shovel ready stuff like all grant funders do. And it is federal money, so there is a NEPA, National Environmental Policy Act requirement, but DOT will help with that. So you don't have to have NEPA done. We are currently using some of this funding to do maintenance on the Mosquito Cove Trail. We got that grant 2 years ago, and it's been helping on those renovations. So largely funding labor, staff time, crew. So as I've been reviewing this potential and thinking about different opportunities, the first place I go is where we did a bunch of public comment and got input from people in the 2023 trail plan. That was multiple years of public engagement to come up with a long list of projects around the community for new trails, or renovations, or maintenance of existing trails. And I went through and looked at the projects that could be of the right size, like just scale as far as budgets. And then I reached out to City Public Works and Parks and Rec and chatted with Connor and Kent, and I'm starting conversations with the Sitka Ranger District and talked with State Parks and got a bunch of other ideas. And have started kind of analyzing those against the grant criteria. Project readiness is generally the biggest filter. Like, how many steps would be required to have like fully know what this costs? Really, you need a cost estimate. And to have a cost estimate, you have need a design more or less. Or an idea of what you're going to do. For instance, Sea Lion Cove, I'd love to rebuild that trail more comprehensively, but that's going to take some real thinking. Is it a reroute? We're not sure. And so that's not quite ready. Same with Forest and Muskeg. That boardwalk is getting towards the end of its lifespan, but might not be there yet. Do we want to replace in kind? Do we want to do some sort of other material? Some major design questions would need to be answered. So eliminated or postponed for now. Sifting towards the top in these conversations has been the Medovice Lake reroute project, which was identified in the trail plan. It originally came to my awareness through a guy named Taylor Colvin, who was with NSRA at the time, now works for the city, but he was living out there and suggested this idea, like, why have users go through the hatchery, walk through housing, wander around, get lost, ask hatchery workers where to go, ford a stream that may or may not be quite deep, and then go to the trail? Why not stay on the north side of the stream and just build a connector? So this is a 0.2 miles. It's a small amount of trail, but it's rugged terrain. And it would increase access significantly, I think, to this facility, because when I'm thinking about going out for the hike, I'm like, I don't know what that stream is going to do. It's so volatile, not always related to flow. It's like meltwater and it's pretty flashy. So I don't really want to go wade knee deep, and so I don't go out to this trail, but it's a beautiful spot. We are seeing a demand for need for guiding as well as local use. I've done initial conversations with Public Works, with City Electric, and with NSRA in this round, and obviously in past rounds when we initially had the plan. This idea was included in a trail plan to which the city signed on as in an MOA saying we support all these ideas. So we've got no red flags, but that's an initial idea. The question is, are there other ideas I should be thinking about, or what do you think about this Medovice Lake project?
Just from a water hydrology maintenance perspective, it'd be really good to look at that segment, because you might be creating yourself a nightmare for maintenance, because it's probably your steepest portion and it's adding a quarter length of steep, highly mobile area. And then I'll just say, like, the trail use increase we've seen the last couple of years is tourism related. And it seems like where we need to, I don't know, put some funding is towards something similar to Thimbleberry that can accommodate a lot of people and not have conflict with locals, like a place where we funnel the tourists. And this is not a place for that. Just some thoughts right off the top of my head.
Or somehow improve what we have to make it handle more people more easily, something along those lines. But yeah, I that's a great idea. I mean, there are issues with that. I mean, it'd be nice to have a trail go all the way around too. Save a lot of issues and heartache for some people.
Ford is already was suggesting we put in some sort of boat facility.
There you go.
And have like more of a system to pull the boat up mm-hmm. and get a new boat. And...
Yeah.
Yeah. A lot of times the issue isn't that there isn't a boat. It's that there isn't a boat there because it's at the other end of the lake.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It would be cool to have a public cable
system for that.
Yeah. That would be really clever to set up like a public use thing. I mean, there'd be liability issues, but I think that the recreational use statutes, you know, as long as there's no charge, there's a lot of immunity. So I don't think we should be afraid of doing something because of liability. I think just being like, you know, sort of be European about it, like just let it happen.
Steve, did you have a comment?
Yes, I've actually never been up there, but you were talking about how they have to go through and cross a stream and come back. I think that's great to keep it on the other side. Now, KK brought up that steeper there might be harder with the hydrology, water running downhill, maintaining it. But if you're able to put it in there, put some drainage so it'll maintain there, I think that's a great idea. That's more of a, yeah, you'll get some tourists up there, but that's been more of a local place, I would think. But yeah, I think that's fantastic. Use it here because it's something that's small enough that stays within that budget.
I had been, yeah, I do think hydrology and terrain is like one of the bigger challenges. And Roland and I went and scoped it last weekend. And I was mostly concerned about hillside stability. It's a really steep hillside, and was expecting to see a lot of active flow and debris flow and slide paths. And we encountered a lot more mature forest than I expected. One of the bigger spruce trees I've seen around, something like a 6 foot diameter. There's a really well-established bear trail. And mostly you can see that there's slide paths up mm-hmm. above, and there's a band of mature forest. So I think that's probably avalanche that slows or somehow mm-hmm. is caught. And there's a little bit, there's a couple spots where you're in brush, that like could be evidence of more active flow, but mostly pretty mature forest and some spots that are just really, really pretty and would add a lot of scenic value to the trail also. So I'm in initial conversations with Barth Hamburg. I'd want to get out there and come up with a design approach. It would probably be maybe some small machine support and hand crew construction, and we've got to figure out how to cost that roughly. But this would not, it would be also a kind of a phased approach. 2027 would be final design, maybe beginning some excavation, and then a construction 2028 is how I would plan it out, because we've got to do the NEPA process, cultural resources survey.
Can you include the dock idea?
I think I would try to include some renovations to the existing trail and a dock. And then my vision would be like, we'd have a crew that's funded to work on this Medici trail, and like there'd be some days where they couldn't do construction. We'd send them up the trail and they'd be doing work kind of throughout, was my idea.
Because it becomes multi-use then, you know, I mean, by definition. And it's, and you're in a, you know, it's a cool other activity. It doesn't, I mean, it's for ferrying to the other end, of course, but which is old growth, beautiful old growth over there, at least a section of it is. But yeah, I think that would be just a cool thing. It's an unusual thing to have like a public kind of ferry system set up, you know, to cross a little lake, Finger Lake.
Yeah, I got a boogie, but thanks for chasing the grants and coming up with ideas. And it's great to see the trail plan in use. And I don't know if NSERA ever funds anything, but this could be a partnership project with NSERA too.
I'm going over to Encirad in an hour to talk with Scott a little more in depth. Cool. Yeah, there's no, I don't need anything right now, but if we decide to go with this, I'll probably come back next month and ask for a letter of support.
Thank you, Ben. We are now at persons to be heard for items on or off the agenda, not to exceed 3 minutes per individual. And we do not have anyone in the audience. So we can move on to adjournment, and we will meet again on October 13th. Thank you, everyone. And Steve, this is your last meeting. Yes, I didn't know if everyone knew that. And I, so Steve, this is, and he is not reapplying.
Thank you so much for your
Not
service,
at this
Steve. We
time.
really appreciate
Oh,
it.
thanks, and same with you all.
Thank you, Steve.
Thanks, Steve.
You will
Thanks.
be sorely missed.
Yeah.
And I missed the meeting. It's like I was sitting here, sat down at my desk, and like literally at 12 o'clock, I'm like, "Oh
Oh
no,
no.
shoot."
I don't know who's going to pack in a binder with all our old notes.
We need the records.
Are you going to pass down
I'll
the
pass
binder?
that to
Pass
Manoj.
down the
We are institutional memory.
Yes. Yes, it's been a pleasure serving with you, Steve.
You all as well.
Thanks for
Thank you.
stepping into the chair position.
Assistant chair.
See you around, Steve. Have a good
Okay,
rest of your
I'll be
day.
around.
Thank you
Hey,
again.
thanks. It's going to be soggy. Bye.